Cardiff Carnival 25th Anniversary Project. Interviewer, Steve Fletcher. Interviewee, Sophia Khan. Location of interview, Swicker Office. Today's date is the 12th of October 2015. Sophia, before we start, would you be kind enough, for the record, to spell your name in full?
Yes, Steve. Sophia, S-O-P-H-I-A, Khan, K-H-A-N.
That's fantastic. So, when did you first, and how did you first make contact with the Cardiff Carnival?
It was through my steel pan teacher at the time, Wada. I was 14 and I'd been playing steel pans for him. Actually, he'd been teaching me in school. And then he got me and my friend involved in Cardiff Carnival.
That's fantastic. Were you at Fitzalan High School or were you...
No, I was in Lanremney High.
Got it.
In Lanremney.
And of course, for those who don't know, and for future posterity, Wada, his official name, Hubert Placide, is from the wonderful Caribbean island of St. Lucia. And I had the pleasure of meeting him for the first time in 1991 when Swicker was based in Channelview Leisure Centre down in Grangetown. When I had a knock on the office door and Mike Johnson, who ran the centre, said, I've just had somebody pop in from the Caribbean who's wondering if there's any bar work, but he plays steel pans. And that he introduced me to Wada. And way back then, we brought the first set of steel pans and put him on wage. And that's when he began teaching steel pan, primarily in schools, back in 1991. And here we are in 2002. And he's introduced you to Cardiff Carnival. You're playing pan regularly. Can you remember a little bit about your record as a panist, a pan man? Woman in pan. We couldn't decide pan player. We couldn't decide what to call you in our preamble. Yes,
pan person.
Pan person. I like it.
Well, yeah. So the area of Cardiff, which I'm from, we didn't know about Cardiff Carnival at all. And it was a new thing to us. So, yeah, Wada told my friends and I about it. He brought us down on the, I think it was a launch party, yeah. So we could have a look around.
And this would be to the Bute Town Youth Pavilion?
Bute Town Youth Pavilion,
excellent,
yeah.
Down the docks.
From there, my friend Nina Kiaga, who's been involved for a long time, we both got involved at the age of 14. Wada was a great mentor, he's a great teacher, from that time, we had gone on then to do street parades in Carmarthen, and then we started doing Swansea Carnival as well.
So excellent.
It kind of linked us in from there to do other like youth projects.
And I'm right in thinking Cardiff Carnival 2002, the steel pan was performed not on the back of a lorry, not walking with your pan set inside a float, but was actually... a Caribbean format called Pan Round the Neck.
Yeah.
And I remember the carnival team, and certainly Wada, giving us instructions as to how to make the backpacks to hang the steel pans off, mm-hmm. so that they're in front of you and you're there playing. You mentioned that Wada gave you some very good advice in the event that you were to drop your pan sticks whilst on parade. What was it? What was his advice to you?
So he said if we drop our sticks, there's no way we can pick them up again. And it was nice because you'd always have someone running behind you, giving you water. They would pick your sticks up, but we had the weeks leading up to Carnival, we could decorate our backpacks.
Yeah.
So we. We'd use straps of material to wind around the shoulders and the harness, and we'd kind of make pockets to put extra sticks in.
Got it.
So we could just grip them out, kind of like a drummer when they've got spare sticks in their back, like a little backpack.
I was thinking of more of an archer actually reaching for his bow and arrows behind him
when he did that.
It was like whoop. Next one,
so
bish bash bush.
And I mean, like WADA taught in a way that everyone can play. Even when people would say, oh, you know, I'm not musically minded at all and I have no rhythm.
Yeah.
WADA's got a gift that anyone of any background, any walk of life, that could, he, like, you could play pans.
Yes.
He'd teach you in such a way that would liberate you and make you feel that, you know, basically, like, when you're there on the pan, you are invincible. But in a good way.
Yeah, in a good way.
And I mean, you know, especially for, you know, at the time, I just lost my father. And for, you know, a girl of 14, that was the best therapy anyone could ever give to me. And, you know, and I always take my hat off to WADA, and he'll always hold a dear place in my heart. Because, he opened up a door to me that I never knew existed.
Yeah. And so, did you start off on bass pans, which, of course, are 6 full oil drums on the floor?
Yeah.
One person playing 6 drums is always...
Yeah.
I've always thought that person is just like... Yeah, the way they swivel
playing,
around.
Yeah, when I started playing, it was 8 drums.
Wow.
So
with you in the centre. Right,
yeah, sometimes it's 8, sometimes it's 6.
Right.
So yeah, I started playing bass drum. That's where it was. And then I moved on to when I played in Carnival, I started on guitar.
Right.
So when you're walking with a pan, they get condensed down.
Yeah.
So guitar's usually two pans, but when you're walking, it turns into one.
A pan around the neck, it's got to be one. Yeah.
And then as time went on, I moved on to tenor, which is kind of like the vocals of the band.
Yeah.
Which was amazing. It was perfect. It was nice to be able to play, you know, a few different parts in the pan orchestra.
Yes.
So yeah.
Fantastic. When WADA was leading the Pan Round the Neck group on Parade, would he be playing pan or would he be on a cowbell with a whistle at the front, giving you the basic rhythm?
Because
he's facing you, isn't he? He's like Samba Galeas, their musical director, faces the players.
Yeah.
Has his back to the audience.
So at times he'd either be on a snare.
Right.
So he'd be playing snare.
Giving the rhythm, yeah.
Or he'd be on a whistle with a cowbell.
Yeah, yeah.
But WADA would be getting involved. He'd always have a set of sticks on him. So he'd just like jump in and you'd be playing pan.
On your pan, like, brilliant.
He'd play like, you know, an extra few notes. And it was nice because he would get involved. It wasn't just like, okay, no. I'm leading this. Yeah, he'd really get involved, and he'd
like the icing on the cake.
Even when the years it would rain so much,
yes,
it would be really hard to play your pan because you'd have to keep tipping it out.
Like, let's talk about water. Yeah. So you literally had to. I can remember when we knew that the forecast was bad, that amongst our shopping list for the day would be huge amounts of the most absorbent kitchen roll we could think of. Mm-hmm. Because for a nanosecond, we could wipe the pans and you'd be back to where you started. But, I mean, so you came on what can be called a few of the deluge years.
Yeah, I think the worst year was when we first got put on a float.
Right.
Did
it have a roof on it or not?
No, it didn't. It didn't have it.
We learned to put roofs on them eventually. Yeah.
and it was a year that we were down the Oval Basin.
Right.
And they had all the decking. So that got really, really
slippery. Yeah.
All the Samba girls had to take their heels off because they couldn't dance on it at all.
Yeah.
It was really hard to play any songs. No. But WADA kept our spirits up. Yeah. Our face painted, washed away. We kind of looked like drowned rats.
But happy carnival drowned rats.
Yeah, it was happy, and I just remember every 2 minutes having to empty my own pan of water and get
this
and
is
get
steel pan in Wales, yeah. Folks, you know, the truth behind the
but it was fun and I
can remember the audience's reaction, because we don't hear as much steel pan in Wales as perhaps we ought to do, you know, so that when there is a chance to hear it in a public for me, I could always tell where the pan band was, because there's something about that music that seems to touch everybody. You know, that really, you could tell there would be smiles and cheers, and you'd just know where the pan band was passing at that point. Yeah. I never saw people turn. Yeah, but it seems to me that steel pan has a universality and an uplifting, something about it that brings out the best in the audience as well.
steel pan has got the ability. I mean, every instrument has got the ability when it's played and played right. You know, it can touch everyone in, you know, in their, you know, it does, it touches your soul. But steel pan has got the ability for someone who thinks they can't play an instrument to be able to play it and feel like a virtuoso immediately. And I think,
so it's really accessible with,
yeah,
basically.
And it's, know, and yeah, it's got such a life to it. And it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's an oil drum.
Yeah.
A guitar is made in a way and is crafted. And even though a pan is made, it's, yeah, it's kind of, it has, it's made the same way as a guitar. It's got all the love and, you know, devotion in it. But it's a drum at the end of the day. It's an oil drum. It's an oil drum. It was used, and then it's been recycled into something that makes the most beautiful sound,
yes,
that you'd never think would like come out of an oil drum.
Yeah.
And yeah, as soon as you play and you see the reaction of the people, it's it just makes you want to play more, and it takes you to a place, and especially as a child, you know. It takes you to a place which you don't even know exists, and it lets your imagination free.
So your carnival history began as a pan player, a panist. Other members of your family were also involved in Cardiff Carnival in different respects. As musicians, as dance tutors, and I suppose everyone gets involved in the making. So after your several years with WADA and the Steel Pan Group, playing Pan Man on the Neck, we get to as late as Cardiff Carnival 2011, Magic. And there was a very, very popular, in fact, yes, I think it started off relatively small, the American Indian section. And you ended up making your first ever Queen costume on a backpack. What was that like?
Well, I didn't wear the backpack. But
you designed it. You made it.
I had.
You plucked those chickens. Little ball chickens in China is all I can say.
Adrian gave me an unlimited supply of feathers and wire.
Right.
And yeah, I made my first headdress, big headdress.
Yes. Was there any glue gunning involved? Because I always associate the smell of burning human flesh with the carnival camp.
Yeah, it was a lot of burning flesh. It was a lot of glue gunning.
Excellent. Past the Bernies. That's a,
isn't, yeah. Yeah. And it was brilliant. It was the first year that I'd got involved dancing, and I would have done pans if WADA had been involved. And it was quite, yeah, it was quite hard for me because I wasn't going to get involved in the first place, because. Yeah, my heart lied with the pans.
Right.
And yeah, so it was only because of my sister that I came back to Carnival.
Got it.
And yeah, I had a really good time. It was really good being able to dance and not play pans.
And that the Carnival camp would have been at Channelview Leisure Centre then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I remember on the one hand, we were lucky to secure a big space because we need lots of room. But did the lack of natural daylight in there ever do your head in? It was a bit like going into sodium lit hell after a while, wasn't it?
It was quite hard. But at the same time, I was used to working backstage in theatre. So you don't have
you don't need natural daylight or fresh air or any of those sort of vitamins or whatever. They're for wimps.
Yeah, but it was quite a change. Yeah. I think in the pavilion there was more of an atmosphere.
Right.
It had been more.
And certainly,
vibe.
We had the park outside when the weather was good. We could take work outside,
which was really nice. So Channel View was quite restricted in a way, and I think a lot of the public felt that as well.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that's why you didn't get as many participators as you normally would.
Right.
Just because, you know, Carnival is built on vibe, is built on feeling, is built on emotions, and you know, and workshop is exactly the same. So if you haven't if there's something lacking in that, then people go off feelings, they go off their vibe, and yeah, I think that's why maybe
I can see you respect that.
It hadn't hit the numbers that everyone thought it was, but it was, you know, it was great. I had a good time and enjoyed every
so day. If you designed and made the giant backpack with unlimited feathers, I love that idea. That's a good name. That's a good name for a carnival company, isn't it? Unlimited feathers. We might use that in the future. Were you in the American Indian section when you were dancing on the parade or not? Because you said you didn't play.
Yes.
You were around it and the rest of it.
Yes. Yeah.
And would your sister Sakina Khan, would she have dared to give you dance steps, or were you autonomous?
No. She gave us a really good choreography. And I'm not a dancer at all. I don't claim to be a dancer, but it went well with the music, and yeah, I think there was 40.
It grew. It was a very popular section.
So I think at times, you know, she made it well. So the more it grew, the dance wasn't too complicated, that, you know, it would still look good though.
Excellent.
You know, it's you know, she still pulled it off, and I had fun doing it. It was good. It was a good experience.
Lovely.
Yeah.
And the following year, of course, your brother was involved. Take us through that year. How did you get involved in the Blue Warriors, wasn't it? I remember.
Yeah, I had a break from the tour I was on. So I came back to the UK.
Yeah.
And I just popped down to say hello to everyone, and it was the only time I was going to get to see
my brother. Like being press gang, this bit, isn't it?
Well, you learned from that lesson, didn't you? Yeah, and then I saw Adrian and then Kath, the seamstress at the time.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, you should stay and help out, and I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, well, I've got a few weeks off from work, and then Misha and Naomi were there, and I hadn't seen them in a long time.
Yeah.
And I just ended up getting involved, and I wasn't going to do it. And I was like, oh, I wanted a break. It's like my time off from work. But yeah, I did. And I had lots of fun with that. And it was a nice difference. It was a nice contrast from the previous year with my sister. So we were Blue Warriors there, and it was comfortable. The costumes were so comfortable.
Yes, were they daisy cutters, big baggy trousers? Yeah. I can see the royal blue color, really beautiful.
And the, you know, royal blue and silver. They really stood out.
And the headpieces again were more, I would just say, the masculine version. So you weren't, you really could throw yourself around, and you weren't worried about something.
No, and it was nice. And Imran designed them in a way, so even though that we weren't, he didn't use feathers. The material he used, when it rained, it didn't damage the headdress at all.
No,
and it's really light on your head, really really secure. And to be honest, it was the first time in carnival that I'd worn a headdress, even when I was playing pants and we'd have to wear headpieces, that you didn't feel like you were wearing anything.
Excellent.
So you could throw your head about, you could do big jumps in the air, big kicks, and it stays on your head. And it rained. it rained really bad that year.
It did.
Really bad. And it's perfect because it was like plastic, so it didn't even get wet. Your head didn't even get wet. So it's like wearing an umbrella.
The perfect carnival headpiece in many ways. Before we go on to your most, so we've had Pan Player, we've had designing and making, we've had dancing. You really are a true carnivalist, I would say. And then before we get into, or perhaps your final role, which was this summer in 2015, well, let's go there and explain a little bit about what you've been doing in the rest of your career, etc. Because there's a point of contact, isn't there? There's obviously, carnival is about pressure. It's about making, you know, whatever the resources, we try to make them go twice as far. We work in a mythical seventh gear. You know, the whole project starts with a deadline, you know, before the clock's ticking from day one, you know. And at the heart of that, we have the designer, but their right-hand person is the seamstress, the person who is overlooking the physical creation, the interpretation of all these designs, who's there, and you were the seamstress for Carnival 2015. Mm. How emotionally scarred are you, Sophia, by that? That was a joke.
Very emotionally scarred. No, it's fine.
She seems to be well.
Yeah, well, my job as a seamstress anyway, and working in theatre, and, you know, you've got deadlines on you constantly. So you live on a deadline. To be honest, I was quite fine with that.
You looked very much in your element.
And
you had the right accessible, but authority as well, which is, I'm dealing with this person, so wait patiently, and you will have my attention.
Yeah.
And it seemed like a formula that everybody, by and large, understood, you know. I think that could show that it came from your background. I mean, I'm right thinking you've worked... Oh, that's name drop. you worked on cruise ships, but you also have worked as part of DreamWorks. Was that a year-long tour of Madagascar? I was impressed.
It was a year with DreamWorks. Well, actually, I worked with DreamWorks longer than a year because I did Ice Age on Ice with them.
Wow.
Which was a cast of 44 people.
All right.
44 performers. And...
Touring UK or internationally? Or?
We did some parts in the UK, and that was the whole setup and like rehearsal dates. And then we went on to do a Germany tour. And then once the Germany tour was finished, I went on to set up Madagascar. And then I toured with Madagascar. We did a UK tour, which was amazing. And then we went on to do a Latin American tour, which lasted almost... a year in Latin America.
Wow, so. A hell of a life experience.
So it was a long time.
You know where the bodies are buried, don't you? You should see the smile on her face at this point. It's all coming back. So you took all that experience and you brought that to the Cardiff Carnival in 2015. Tell us more.
That, I'd been working. I'd been doing a lot more with artists and dancers. So I'd been working with various singers. Pop stars.
Care to drop a few names?
Probably shouldn't. But I was doing local crew wardrobe for a long time.
Right.
Local crew meaning I travelled up and down the country with it as well.
Local to the UK.
I did. I started off. I think the first big person that I'd worked for was Lady Gaga. And I know I shouldn't be, but I didn't.
My jaw just dropped.
I wasn't really a fan of her music at all.
No, no.
I'm still not really.
Not even Wadda's version of Poker Face on Steel Pan.
Wadda's version, Poker Face was one of my favourite songs to play.
Excellent.
One of my favourite songs to play.
I always thought that was, when he played me that the first time, I was just like, wow.
But Wadda could play, literally, he could make any tune. I mean, even like country and western songs. He'd convert those to fan and he'd make them sound better than the originals. I've done like people like from like smaller like UK acts like Westlife and Elton John, George Michael. Peter Andre was probably the last person I'd worked with before I went on and did.
Got it. I made a career move into more.
Music
theatre.
And then I went into theatre.
Got it.
But yeah, I mean, I've been doing wardrobe and seamstress work for quite a while.
Got it.
Yeah.
And in terms of challenges this summer at the 26th Cardiff Carnival. Was there anything when you were up against it? Was it time or whatever? Or was it all smooth? Was there anything good, bad or ugly? What sort of comes to mind? It's sort of like, do you occasionally have to say, look, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
That's, you know, because you're very much part of the design process.
And I think the thing is, you know, we all have these images in our mind that we want, like, you know, we want this to happen and we want this to happen. And when you've just got one person making... Because really, I'm there to make all the base costumes, then they get embellished.
Yeah.
But at times, there's more work that I have to do that the public can't do.
Right.
So I have to do part of the embellishment.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there was at times, there was challenges.
Yeah.
I think there were challenges for everyone, really.
It's a very pressurised situation. It's an art form that sort of invites that, in a sense, doesn't it? We're going to try really hard now to do something.
Yeah, but I think because of my background and having to work quite quickly, it was just kind of like a normal pace for me.
Yeah.
And to be honest, some days I was like, oh, I think I'm working quite slow today.
that we would have noticed. You just seem to,
But I just think...
you seem to be so in your element. Every time I pass you, you're just
when I've got my
Sophia, sorted. You just walk past her, like, she's clearly... Yeah, this is a woman who's not... Who's what, you know, she's not waving and drowning, she's waving, you know.
I think, you know, the day I went in and Adrian and Jenny were like, right, so there's machines, there's the material, and this is your area. So just set it up how you want it. So I did.
Yeah.
And I didn't know whether it was set up the right way or how the seamstress did it the year before. There was no passover. No,
you're free to do what's
handbook. Which, you know, at first I was just like, oh, okay. So that's why I kept asking questions like, okay, how do you guys do it? Because you know, when I go into a job, there's kind of like non-written rules or kind of like a Passover book.
Yeah.
Like this is how, you know, guidelines, and then you just basically do what you want to do. But this was basically a free for all. So you just go in and just do what you do.
Yeah.
Which in the end worked well, and I think if I was to do it again, then you know I know where to start from, and I know for a fact if I was to do it again, then I could probably make a lot more costumes in the time that I had, and I know, you know, I know how to organise my time a bit better, and I think as a, you know, it is a community project. And it was fun being it was nice being able to have the freedom to get in and design, you know, and as well like work with the community.
It was
quite a fulfilling job. It's quite a fulfilling role. And then at times being able just to sit down and have my cup of tea.
So, Sophia, I mean, it seems to me that you and other members of your family have had an extraordinary history in terms of Cardiff Carnival. What's nice is the way that you've come in from so many different angles and contributed so much over such a long period of time, since you were 14. So starting as a steel pan player and the very wonderful Wadda, moving on to design a huge backpack and help with other costume construction, and then dancing alongside both your brother and your sister as tutors. And then your final incarnation as El Supremo, the seamstress who is the source. You're almost like you're the hub at the centre of a wheel, aren't they? I mean, all roads led to you and the seamstress's, what can I say, corner, which expanded to quite rightly to take over the space it needed. So I have no reservation whatsoever in wholeheartedly awarding you the mythical and entirely visible honour of Sophia Khan. You are indeed a Cardiff Carnival hero. Thank you very much.
Thank you.